Welcome to B2B, Boots to Books, the show where we explore the journeys of veterans and military-connected students as they navigate their paths from service to the classroom and beyond. I'm Dustin Abrego.
And I'm Rebecca Allen, your hosts. Each week, we'll dive into powerful stories of resilience, determination, and success.
Whether you're a veteran yourself, a military family member, or simply inspired by the strength of those who serve, you're in the right place.
Let's turn the page and start this incredible journey together.
Hello, welcome back to B2B. I'm Dustin Abrego.
And I'm Rebecca Allen.
All right, so this week we're going to be talking ins and outs of finances. When we talk about finance stuff, we're framing it about both in service, out of service, what those aspects look like. Mm-hmm. This stems from a conversation, because again, civilian my entire life, never served, and looking at or seeing some things of this is how these type aspects work when you're in. And I don't want to say I was appalled, but like as a taxpayer, I was like, I don't understand how this is a thing. Mm-hmm. So Rebecca, you're gonna be in the hot seat, I guess, answering some of these questions. Yep. As you would know, starting first with pay dates. Yes. If you're a civilian, depending on where you work, it's either first and 15th or every 2 weeks, or there's certain places where I was in grad school, it was once a month. Mm-hmm. And that's what it looks like. But what's it look like when you're in service, at least?
So when you're in service, pay dates are the 1st and the 15th. Like that's what it is.
For the whole government, for whole government. All yeah. Service.
So for military, it's 1st and 15th.
Okay.
And so that's kind of what you base your life around. Mm-hmm. Is the 1st and the 15th. And trying to, you can usually figure out what kind of budgeting you need to do if you aren't living in the barracks, or really if you do actually have bills that you need to focus on. Mm-hmm. 1st and the 15th, those are the days that you look forward to, and that's what everything else is planned around.
Okay. The one that I think started this off is government travel card concepts versus civilian. So
yeah,
for being a civilian, when I've worked at other places, not in my current job because I don't manage budgets and stuff, when I worked at Central, I had 3 credit cards. It was the institution. My name was on it because I was the user and I was, yes, responsible for it. So if stuff happened, like, yes, I would be the person at fault and whatnot. But that wasn't a line of credit for me. Mm-hmm. But can you talk me through what that looks like for service members?
Yeah. So the government travel card is always something that, at least when I was in, it was a bit of a joke. It was, you know, your life is attached to this government travel card. You hang on to the GTC. You don't use it at all, but you must know where it is at all times. It was an inspectable item in my unit.
I don't even know what an inspectable item means. So let's start there.
So an inspectable item is something where at any point in time, someone can come up to you and say, show me this.
So government property, I need to see this whenever I ask.
Yep.
Gotcha. Yep. Okay.
And because our unit was one of those units that could be called up at any time, and mm-hmm. you have 24, 48, 96 hours to be where you need to be, it's an inspectable item. It was the same as your government ID, your CAT mm-hmm. card. You had to have that on you. But it was also, you don't want to have your government travel card on you, because if it gets lost or if you accidentally use it or anything, then it's a whole nother mess. So it was always, do I need it this month? Or do I leave it in the safe, or what do I do with it? But in certain situations, you have to use it. So I was put on orders and mm-hmm. I have to use it to buy my lunch. It's being used for my lodging because they have a staying in a hotel instead of mm-hmm. in barracks or something like that. Mm-hmm. You have to have it on you. But you also have to be very aware of what you're using it for. So it can't be used if you're using it when you're purchasing a meal. It can't be used for alcohol, things like that. Mm-hmm.
If you were to go do disaster relief somewhere, mm-hmm. Let's say, for example, because we've talked through this a lot, but people that are civilians and others don't know, if you get called for disaster relief or something like that, like this isn't the Revolutionary War. You guys aren't in like wool tents and stuff, right? You're going to use that card because you're on orders to stay at some hotel that's been already designated. You're not just picking whatever. It's like, hey, we're all staying here. This is what's happening. You need to be using your card for this aspect. For the most part,
for
the example
yeah.
of this is what this is meant for because you are working.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you are going TDY, which is I'm being put on orders in another location.
TDY.
Tour of Duty Yonder. It's
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
No one ever calls it that. It's TDY or it. I'm going on orders.
Sure.
So like I was TDY for an event that we were supporting. It wasn't any kind of activation or anything like that. It was, it was a conference, but it was down in Louisville and had to use my government travel card for the hotel that we were staying at. When my husband was deployed, they weren't using their government travel cards. There was a contract for the hotel that they were staying in.
Okay. So they did it all as one instead of individual stuff.
It is based on the needs of the mission kind of thing.
Okay.
But the big issue with the travel card is if you use it inappropriately, even if you think that you are using it appropriately, the government may come back and say, this is a massive inappropriate use of it. I can't believe that you went to Wendy's and bought lunch with your government travel card, even though you were on orders and that's what you were told to do. This is not what you're supposed to do. Mm. And so now you can lose the government travel card privilege, which makes it more complicated when you are put on orders.
Sure.
There's a lot that can go into it. And like here, if you don't pay your card, you get angry emails. Hey, your card's going to be shut off if you don't reconcile this. But
eventually they'll pull it out of your paycheck.
Yeah.
The school will, like, because that's what they agree to or whatnot. But
yeah.
The bigger part that like really messed with my head, and I want to clarify with you, is because you have a card here for the school, right?
Yep.
It has your name on it, but that's not a line of credit for you.
Correct.
But the government travel card affects your credit. So it's in your name, but it's not the government's credit per se.
It's yours. Yep.
So it affects your credit score, even though you're required to have it?
Yes. Yeah, so...
Okay, see, that's what messed with me. I was like, I'm not catching this.
Yep. So here, if I use the card for something for work and it doesn't... If I don't reconcile it right away, I get yelled at, yes. It can come out of my paycheck, yes.
Right.
If I did that with a government travel card, then it can negatively impact my credit score.
And you can get in trouble. So it's a credit line in your own name.
That you can't use for your own stuff.
So what if people have bad credit and then they can't? Is it just everyone gets the card regardless of what your credit score is going in?
So we did have a few service members who could not get the card, but one of the things that if you have issues with, if you have like a lot of debt,
defaulted on stuff, your credit score is in recovery, things like that. Yeah.
Depending on what your job is, it can affect your ability to stay in. I had a soldier who was in my section. We were required to have a certain security clearance because of the access to personal information that we had.
Sure.
This individual was going through a divorce and some debt issues came up that very severely impacted their credit score.
Sure.
And their clearance was up for review and their clearance was revoked.
Oh.
So this individual was still on the books in my section. So taking up a slot in my section, meaning we couldn't replace them, but they were put on permanent kitchen staff duty until they were essentially discharged.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Okay. Mildly probably similar to civilian stuff, but it's just the credit being in your own name really just again confuses and boggles my mind with that. Some of the other like stereotypes that we would want to talk about, predatory lending. I've only since working this position and stuff, like what would be the meme about a car loan with a individual living on base, off base, whatever. I hadn't heard this and they're like, oh yeah, it's this. And I went, what?
Yep. So it's a running joke outside of bases that you're always going to find the car lots with insanely high interest rates. You're going to find the payday advance places and you're going to find strip clubs. That's what you're going to see when you get.
And we're saying like 25% interest rate for like cars. Like
high,
we know rates are high relatively now versus a few years ago, but still like like baffling.
Yep. So there has been legislation in the past that has pushed through that has tried to quell some of that. Mm-hmm. The military has essentially banned the use of payday advance places. So you can't go to one of these payday advance loan areas outside of base. And yeah, I know that I'm getting paid on the 15th. Like, again, guaranteed paycheck on the 1st and the 15th.
Okay.
And so between that, you need a couple grand for something, maybe to go get that 25% Dodge Charger, and you're going to the payday advance place. But then you're also looking at 15, 20, 25% interest on top of that payday advance loan.
So why, I guess, the running joke, meme, whatever, of the high percentage for vehicles outside of base, is it because there's a bunch of people there to stereotype that, like, don't have bills, but then also don't have credit because they're younger-ish, maybe?
A lot of it is there's... When you are...
Broad strokes. We're not talking about any specific branch or
No.
Like,
when you are an E1, E2, E3, so brand new, fresh into the military, you know, you probably have a signing bonus. You probably got that nice big paycheck.
Most money you've probably seen in your life, likely.
Yes. Yep. Coming out of basic and AIT, you get those bonuses. You're living in the barracks. You don't have bills. You're eating at the DFAC. You don't have to worry about housing costs. You don't have to worry about food costs, anything like that. And so you go and you spend your money on all the things that your 18, 19, 20-year-old heart desires. Mm-hmm. And you end up getting that super expensive, super cool car that everyone wants when they first learn how to drive.
But all the places around there...
They're taking advantage of that.
They will take advantage of that because they know that in that area that there is this demographic or interest in these things. Oh, you don't need to have someone co-sign with you.
Yeah.
Because the percent will just be hurting.
Yes.
I will say, as someone that lived on campus in my previous job, I did do that thing, but not to this like crazy percentage of loan, because I went to a place and I was like, I don't have any bills because I live on campus, I have a meal plan, and they're like, we don't get it. With thankfully they weren't like, sure, we'll give it to you 25%, right? Because that would have been awful and stuff. So
the only difference between the young college student who finally has that freedom and the young service member who finally has that freedom is that young service member has a guaranteed paycheck. So
facts versus myths. We're going to go through some of this. The SCRA, or the Service Member Civil Relief Act. Yes. I only heard about this right before we got on here. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
So the Service Member Civil Relief Act is something that actually guardsmen will be very familiar with if they've deployed, because it is a protection act for when you are activated, when it comes to certain lending practices.
And this is federal government law stuff.
Federal government.
So everyone's, okay.
Yep. So if you are put on Title 10 activation, so most deployments are Title 10.
These are federal orders usually, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Gotcha.
So if you are activated, you are deployed, you can request, it's a certificate of eligibility, things have to be reviewed, but you can request protection through the Service Members Civil Relief Act, the SCRA, and you can make sure that your house can't be foreclosed on because you may have payment issues while you are deployed. Now, if there are problems prior to your deployment, those are things that are going to be taken into consideration, but it can't be foreclosed on. They can't sell your property from under you while you are deployed.
Right, because you have other things you should be worried about.
Yeah. So if there are judgments against you at the moment, those can be put on hold. They're not going to be waived, but you can't be taken to civil court for things like this while you're actively deployed.
Right.
So things like that can be put on hold. Your interest rates have to be reduced to, it's 6% right now. So if you have a loan at 10%, they are required during the duration of those orders to reduce that interest rate to 6%.
Okay.
It can go back up when you come off of orders. But they also can't raise your interest rate to 6%. So if you're sitting at a 4%, they can't be like, oh, well, you're on orders now, 6%.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it protects you there. it can, like I said, postpone foreclosures. You can defer income taxes in certain situations on that too.
Can is what I heard.
Can, okay. Yes. So that one isn't really something that I had to deal with my soldiers when they deployed. Mm-hmm. So that one I'm not as familiar with. I just know that it's an option. Usually if there are questions regarding that, we'll refer them to someone who is a little higher.
Yeah, someone talked to a tax professional that yes. is uniquely qualified to work with service members. None of this is financial advice that we're giving. It's more so understanding that these things exist.
Yeah. And
I didn't know a lot of these things.
Yes.
So we're yep. learning together.
One of the big things with the SCRA as well is you can terminate certain leases. So if you have an auto lease, if you have an apartment lease, mm-hmm. And things like phone service, you can terminate your phone service plans if
oh,
you
wow.
need to.
Okay.
We did have a service member who had a lease on a gaming computer. And
I think you remember telling me this.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was an extremely high amount that this service member was paying, and they wanted to terminate their rental on this computer, mm-hmm. essentially. It didn't qualify under SCRA, so they
what?
Were trying to figure out how to take it with them overseas.
I was going to say gym memberships in this, and I was like, oh, it's just anything, but you're telling me, no, it's only certain named items,
there
it sounds
like. There are certain things, yes.
Okay.
And if you are a service member who thinks that you may be activated or deployed at some point, I do encourage you to go to the SCRA website.
Okay.
It's a .mil website, so mm-hmm. it's a government site, mm-hmm. But they do list out everything on there. It's pages and pages of fine
sure.
print.
Yeah.
But it's something where if you are looking at a potential activation, you're going to want to talk with, I'm going to use the Guard as an example.
Sure.
Michigan yeah, Guard specifically. Mm-hmm. We have family programs. You're going to want to talk with your military and family readiness specialist. They can help walk you through the SCRA. They can help make sure that you understand what your rights are with that, mm-hmm. and then getting you in touch with the proper individuals to make sure that whatever you need to do as far as your auto lease, your apartment, if you have subscriptions that you want to see about canceling, some places are just going to be like, look, you're deploying. Okay, fine. We're going to handle it. We'll make mm-hmm. sure that it gets canceled. Other places, you do have to bring in SCRA. It's just mm-hmm. like when it comes to employment stuff. Some employers are going to be like, you're deploying. Okay, like we're here to support you. We're going to make sure that everything's good. Other times, you have to bring in the employment support for Guard and Reserves because they have to right. be reminded that, no, I'm federally protected. So it's a toss-up.
Of whether or not they prove it or not
yeah.
is what they want?
Yeah.
For example, I got a jury duty summons, sent that to my supervisor just saying I got summons. No one's made me like show it, mm-hmm. which like if they want to, like, okay, but I don't have to do that. But like if I worked in other positions, they'd be like, you need to bring it in and show us a copy. I'd be like, okay,
yeah.
whatever. Why would I lie about jury duty?
Yeah.
Personally.
So like if you are ever being deployed, you want to make mm-hmm. sure you're providing a copy of your orders. The same thing we tell our students when they're looking at activations now. If
right.
you need to drop classes, just make sure you're providing a copy of your orders.
And it makes total sense because if you are deployed for a year, you don't want to get a lien on your house from the HOA because you didn't cut your grass or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, I can't do anything about this. Mm-hmm. So that makes total sense.
Yep.
So some further positives, though, let's talk about insurance overall. I'm mildly aware that insurance, if you're a veteran or family member of them, that those insurance companies can be really good, like USAA and some other, and we're not endorsing anyone in particular, but the rates are usually great.
Yeah.
It's a general assumption.
Is it
true?
it has been in the past. So like we had, there are only two that I know of that are dedicated military insurance companies. So it's
okay.
USAA and then Armed Forces Insurance.
Okay.
Like we had AFI when we bought our house.
Okay.
And I mean, we had pretty decent rates from them for a long time. And then we ended up wanting to bundle with car insurance. And
sure.
so then it didn't make sense for us to be with AFI anymore.
Okay.
I've heard mixed reviews on USAA. I've had some individuals that have had absolutely phenomenal experiences with them, and I have others who not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And you always have to remember that when it comes with insurance rates, there are a lot of other factors in there too. So
sure, of course,
if you're looking at like car insurance, have you had multiple accidents? Have you had multiple DUIs? You know,
depends on the vehicle, how old you are as a person, the cost, all kinds of stuff, right? Where you live.
So just because you're a service member or a veteran or the family member of one doesn't necessarily mean that those insurances are going to be the best options for you.
Sure.
So they are there and they can be extremely beneficial depending on where you live. But always you want to shop around just with any insurance. You want to make sure that you're shopping around and understanding what the rates are. And
okay. So when we talk home loans, this is one that I literally was talking about with Roy the other day. Interest of that. So when we talk about that, that's for like veterans and service members, and these are federal. These are by state. Likely there's some state aspect to it because states can run certain things too.
Some states will have home loan assistance programs. Not every state does. When we talk about home loans, it's usually a VA home loan that people are thinking of. And VA home loans can happen in two different ways. They can either be VA direct, so they are essentially your lender and you're working directly with the VA. The VA is footing or is giving you the money essentially.
Sure.
Or they can be VA backed, which is actually more common. So the VA is essentially co-signing your loan.
Interesting. Okay.
There's a lot of eligibility that goes into that. A lot of people think that they get out of service and they're just automatically eligible for VA home loan and that there's no limit and there's all this stuff. There's a lot that goes into it. You do want to make sure that you are eligible appropriately. And I went down a rabbit hole a little bit prepping for this today. I had it all listed out and that was going to become an episode on its own of
VA home loans is going to be an episode. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Just because there's so much that goes into it. And so you want to make sure that you are working with an appropriate lender when it comes to VA home loans. You can use it multiple times. There are factors that go into it. Like you don't have to have a down payment. And technically they say that you wouldn't have to have like the private mortgage insurance, but I can tell you from experience that that's not true. You still have to do a certain percentage of down payment.
And this varies state by state, your local municipal, like please take this. And
yes, there's
I believe every state has some type of free resource that you can connect with on either their own housing thing for their state and or through probably a local VA office, or what would be a resource area for people in this way, or at least as a starting point, right?
I always tell people when it comes to any kind of benefit like this, start with your local veteran service office first, because if they don't know, they will at least have access to the resources in the area. There are multiple resources in Michigan that can outline what mortgages look like and should be very familiar with VA mortgages. Start with your VSO. And if your VSO isn't a good option, then you can call like MVAA and they can get you linked up with appropriate resources too.
And the reason why we also want to highlight that is like that's a source that doesn't have a vested interest versus like what we talked about earlier, where there's plenty of places similar to other episodes where schools will take the GI Bill. They'll eat that, right? And they're totally cool with that, but you don't necessarily get much out of it.
Yeah.
Or how they'll be, predatory sounds wrong, because I'm not pointing fingers, but aggressively interest-rated vehicles in an area because they know that these exist. So talk to a resource that doesn't have a vested interest in you buying from them or their friend or something like that, because there's plenty of people that will gladly put you into debt, and we don't need that for anyone.
Yeah, and I always like to remind veterans as well that we're our own best friends and our own worst enemies. So feel free to definitely talk with other veterans about what their experiences are, but take everything that you hear with a grain of salt, because someone may have used mortgage company A and one person had a phenomenal experience. You know, they would go back to them again and again. Another person may have felt like they were just completely shoved to the side. They had a horrible experience. They'll never do it again. You have to remember that even in the civilian world, we all have different experiences. So definitely ask your buddies, but remember that a glowing review and a scathing review aren't always accurate. experiences for what you may see.
And you could be very jealous of that house or the car or the other things that people have, but you don't get their bills in the mail and seeing how heavy of an envelope that is to open of just not happy stuff. So
yes.
Cool. Anything else you can think of what we want to hit on?
I think that was pretty much everything that we had kind of talked about.
To recap, though, make sure that you're reaching out to local offices, don't have a vested interest. They're only here to serve veterans or service members, or if you're a family member. I feel like we've only really focused on what this looks like if you are the person going.
Yeah.
But these resources are available to spouses and dependents as well. If, like, I'm trying to navigate this, they're deployed, I'm getting these things about, like, their phone bill.
Yeah.
Like, those offices also would be a good starting place for these people if they have questions for their deployed person.
Yes.
Right?
Especially if they are deployed, like, they need to be talking with their family readiness office, not the SFRG, not the volunteer group, but the actual, like, federal or state family readiness office that is supposed to be supporting them during deployment. Military One Source, if you are deployed or you're the family member of someone who's deployed, Military One Source is there as a free option to provide those resources. They're, you know, they're non-biased. They're just there to make sure that they're providing that support. There are a lot of these resources that are available. Even if you're still in service, personal financial counselors are available for our service members. Like,
awesome.
There are a lot of options. So when in doubt, reach out to one of the local resources, MVAA, Veterans Service Office. Come into my office and ask, and I'll get you pointed over to someone. But yeah, when it comes to finances, it's really important that people understand that there are supports available and that they don't have to try and muddle through all of it themselves.
Agreed. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, and look forward to another episode later. You've been listening to B2B, Boots to Books.
Thank you for joining us on this journey through the inspiring stories of veterans and military-connected students.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your community.
We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us on social media or take a listen to previous episodes at lccconnect.com or your favorite streaming platform.
Remember, every story is a step forward.
And together, we can build a bridge from boots to books.
Until next time, stay strong.
And keep moving forward.